Welcome back to Wake Up Tri-Counties, live from our Yem Auto Group studios. I'm Sean Cernan, and joining us live on the phone is Julie Portillo with Freedom House. And Julie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
We're going to be talking about emotional abuse. And first of all, the first question I guess people want to, we should ask is, what is emotional abuse, or what constitutes emotional abuse?
Yeah, that's a great question. Emotional abuse is one of those things that's really hard to define. There's no single definition for, but just for the purposes of our conversation today, I'm going to kind of operate with this definition. Emotional abuse is a way to control another person by using emotions to criticize, embarrass, shame, blame, or otherwise manipulate another person. So the key word there is manipulation and control through use of emotions. Just want to note, we all say and do hurtful things to our friends, our family, our neighbors, our children, right? But it's when we consistently use abusive words and bullying behaviors to wear down somebody's sense of self-worth and undermine their value and identity, that's when it becomes emotional abuse. So again, it's a consistent pattern used to control another person.
Now, there, of course, as you mentioned there, there are different types of emotional abuse.
Yeah, absolutely. So different types of emotional abuse can be anything from criticism, it can be name-calling, belittling somebody, insulting them, can be accusing them of cheating. We see a lot of times projection. So maybe a perpetrator of abuse is cheating themselves, so they're projecting that on their victim. It can be a possessiveness, always having to check in with your partner, letting them know where you're at all times, what you're doing, who you're talking to. It can be constant arguing and yelling. It can be a lot of times when you the yelling is very mean-spirited. Maybe there's a lot of sarcasm and arrogance or even disgust towards that person. A lot of apathy towards them. We see a lot of isolation. So a perpetrator is apt to isolate their victim from any friends and family and outside support in fear of that person seeking support from a family member or a friend. They don't want to be caught in what they're doing, right? So if you keep your victim isolated, it keeps the abuse going. There's a lot of shame and blame. It's all the victim's fault. They don't deserve any better. They're lucky to have somebody like them, right? Like, you're so lazy, no one would ever put up with you, or you're so ugly, no one would ever love a face that looks like that. It can be something like threats of physical harm. I'm going to hurt you if you don't, right? So you see that manipulation piece there. It could be threats of suicide. I'm going to take my life if you ever leave me. It can be intimidation, blackmailing. It can be something like not contributing to or participating in the relationship. So ignoring the victim, rejecting them, making them feel abandoned, refusing to talk to them. People don't think about that as emotional abuse, but just that complete refusal of any sort of engagement. And the last one that I really want to highlight today, and it's probably the more prominent form of manipulation, it's called gaslighting. A lot of people have heard of gaslighting, but maybe don't really know what it is. I notice with a lot of my clients, they've heard of it, but they don't quite know how to define what it is. So gaslighting is essentially a form of manipulation, causing victims to doubt their memories, their judgment, their reality, right, their sanity. So for example, it'd be you being told that you're lying or you're stupid or you're crazy, or you're just making this all up. We do the same with our... I will oftentimes read the narcissist prayer with my clients. The narcissist prayer reads like this, and to me, this is the epitome of gaslighting and emotional abuse at its finest. The narcissist prayer goes like this: that didn't happen, and if it did, it wasn't that bad. And if it was, that's not a big deal. And if it is, that's not my fault. And if it was, I didn't mean it. And if I did, you deserved it. So you can kind of see just how the brain works of narcissistic abuse, right, of using emotional abuse. It didn't happen. If it did, it's not a big deal. If it was, not my fault. If I did, I didn't mean it. If I did, I'm sorry, you deserved it. So it really makes it really hard for victims to really define what's real because they've been gaslighted and emotionally abused for so long that they begin to think like, oh, this is actually, maybe this is my fault. Maybe if I hadn't done this or if I hadn't said that, I wouldn't deserve it, but I do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Emotional abuse is really, it's really hard to define. It's one of those things that's really hard to prove in court. Some people refer to it as the invisible scars of domestic abuse. So if somebody is physically abusing somebody, you'll see markings, right? You'll see bruises, different marks that they're like strangulating them, marks around the neck. But emotional abuse is really, it's really hard to prove. And part of that is if a victim has been gaslighted for so long, they don't even know what's real anymore, right? Like their sense of self-worth is just so, has been so belittled and devalued that they can't even tell they're left from their right and they're up from their down. It's a very disorienting thing. When you look at the effects of emotional abuse, a lot of people deal with depression, anxiety, extremely low self-esteem, paranoia, right? Again, their reality is so disoriented. They don't know who to trust and where to turn to. They may become suicidal, have post-traumatic stress disorder, general poor mental health, and sometimes physical health. Those are just kind of some of the effects that we see from people who have endured long-term emotional abuse.
And one of the things to talk about with this is that once you've emotionally abused someone for so long and taken advantage of their trust, you've robbed somebody of their ability to trust in the future. And that is a long-term impact of this type of emotional abuse.
Oh, absolutely. I spend a lot of time. So I'm a counselor here at Freedom House, and I spend a lot of time working with clients of rebuilding trust, which is a really hard thing to do. It takes a long time. Part of that journey is looking at, people are really aware of like red flags in relationships, right? Especially if you've been through a really rough, abusive relationship, you know what those red flags are, but part of that's also identifying what the green flags are. What are things to look for in people? What makes somebody trustworthy? And just for clients to understand, it does take time to build trust again with somebody, and you can't rush that process. It's tough because you're right. You don't know who to trust and when you'll be able to ever trust again when you've been so hurt.
If somebody feels that they've been emotionally abused, what's the first step they should take?
To remember, it is not your fault. It is not your fault. It is not your fault, right? When that's been so ingrained in your brain, your brain's just wired to think this is my fault. If I had done X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't be in this place, right? So to remember, it's not your fault. You can't fix an emotionally abusive person, right? Their behavior is a choice, and it's up to them to choose otherwise and to get the right help. So don't ever feel like it's up to you to fix them, because you can't. It's not your responsibility, and even if it was, there's no way you can do it. Avoid engaging them, so putting really clear boundaries in place with somebody who's emotionally abusive. Be willing to walk away, detach yourself completely from them. Don't pick up their phone call or answer their text, right? Just completely walk away and stay away from them. If you do have to engage in conversation, making sure that you're not arguing with them or making excuses for their behavior. I hear that a lot. Well, they grew up in a really dysfunctional home. They don't know any better. Their parents had a really abusive relationship. There is no justification for abusive behavior, whether physical, emotional, mental, sexual, whatever it may be. There's no excuse for that. So don't argue and don't make excuses for them. Another thing I would encourage somebody to do is really make sure their mental health and physical health are a priority. Do things, self-care is a big buzz term right now. I like to use the word self-empowerment with my clients. So finding things that really empower you, educating yourself on what you've been through, educating yourself on how to get more mentally and physically healthy, doing things that bring you life, getting out in nature, finding support group, finding trusted friends and family that can walk with you and help keep you rooted. I mentioned earlier that emotional abuse is considered the invisible scars of domestic violence. And one of the goals is to really make the invisible visible. And so one thing I do with my clients who've endured a lot of emotional abuse is encourage them to document, document, document. Find a safe space. Maybe it's a email that the person doesn't know about, or you can text a friend or write in a journal. Do something that documents what they're doing and saying to you, so that when they try to gaslight you and say, oh, I didn't do that or it wasn't that bad, you have proof somewhere of what you're enduring, and that helps you stay rooted in reality.
All right. Well, Julie Portillo with Freedom House, thank you so much for your time. We are out of time, but we appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much.